you're over 30. You might be struggling to get off the couch and get moving, or you might be hitting the gym but unsure what to do. We get it. But you need motivation, and you need to know the steps to take on your journey to fitness and health. You're listening to the 30 Plus Men's Fitness Podcast with your host, Coach Treggs.
So, Jamie, thank you very much for coming on. Jamie Alderton in the house. Been really sort of keen to get you on and talk to you. I spoke to you a little bit before Christmas. You're a busy guy. You're obviously going away for a look like a lovely break with your family. So we set this date and here we are, and I really appreciate your time. How are you? How is 2000?
I'm good.
Treating you so far?
Good. Slow and steady wins the race. I think that's the main focus for 2020. I mean, I always say to people, be a tortoise, and I have a reference to the tortoise and the hare. So many people sprint off in January and they're kind of burnt out by February, March, and that's where they kind of struggle with consistency and progression, is that they go too fast and they don't look at doing small things consistently, in the knowledge that they compound over time. So myself, I'm, you know, getting back into the swing of things with the gym.
Yeah.
It took me a bit of time to recover from the box jump, which was in November, I'm sure, which we'll speak about. And I'm just taking things slow. I've got lots of exciting things this year going on. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to an exciting year.
Excellent, mate. So one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about, obviously, was the kind of the box jump Everest, because that looked awesome. It's not like the only of crazy challenges you've done. You've done the whole running backwards challenge as well. But the box jump Everest was your most recent kind of crazy challenge. Tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that. I know you raised over 20,000 for a local hospice, obviously very close to your heart. But how did you actually come up with that idea of, you know what, I'm going to do all these box jumps, which would essentially see me like climb Everest?
So as with anything, you know, it just comes randomly. I started doing a lot of these charity events about 3 years ago. The first one I pushed a sled for 24 hours, which was phenomenal. Raised over £10,000 for charity. And as with anything that's kind of crazy, you want to kind of match it. And I got actually speaking to a good friend, Ross Edgley, and we got talking on a podcast about how fast I can run backwards. And that led me to thinking about doing a 24-hour event running backwards, you know, about 6 months of training. And I did that in 2017. And, you know, for the next year, 2018, I was going to do another crazy challenge, which for some reason, you know, I had boxes, these soft plier boxes in my gym.
Yeah.
And I got thinking, you know, most big milestones are usually climbing the tallest mountain. So I looked at a 2 foot box and I thought to myself, well, how many box jumps do I need to do in 24 hours? Or, you know, how many box jumps do I need to do to scale the height of Mount Everest? And I've worked out it was 14,515. And if you break that down, it kind of works out 10 box jumps a minute, every minute for 24 hours straight. So that was kind of what I was working towards. Unfortunately, with 2018, I had a lot of other focuses. I couldn't concentrate fully on training, you know, because essentially it's a full-time job, the training, to be able to, you know, to train for that. Postponed it till last year, which is 2019, and decided that the end of November was going to be the date.
Yep.
And gave myself 3 months of training. And that was my full focus for it. So managed to successfully complete it. I'm literally just submitted everything to Guinness World Records yesterday. And I say we because it's a joint effort. You know, I couldn't have done it without the team around me. And we did it in around 22 hours and 16 minutes. We ended up finishing it in.
Amazing. So let me ask you this. Obviously, you're a fit guy. You've done many challenges over time. Training for that, okay? I was tuning into some of your lives where you were just doing mammoth, crazy box jump sessions, okay? But what kind of other stuff was going on to allow you to kind of prepare for that, recover for that? Because you had a pretty bad calf injury, like quite close, didn't you, I seem to remember?
Yeah, I think a lot. I mean, I'm very fortunate that that happened the first couple of weeks.
And all right, okay.
A lot of it was due to not warming up properly. And doing it on a wooden box,
okay,
which was a killer. And you know, I'm glad to get those kind of things, because as with any event, you know, whenever I do a training session, I take each training session seriously, because in 3 months, you know, I essentially had about, I think it was 11 box jump sessions. So each one was vital.
Interesting, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, how do you train for that? And it's basically the law of specificity. So it's specific adaptation to imposed demands. The more you do something, the more consistent that you are with it, the better that you get at it. So, for example, when I was doing the sled, I started building up the hours, you know, over 3 months, built up to 8 hours. And then my body was more adapted to sled pushing. When it came to backwards running, once again, started with an hour, built up to sort of 6, 7 hours, 8 hours, and then did the 24 hours. And it's exactly the same with a box jump. You know, I started with 1 hour sessions, then 2 hours, and 3 hours, then four, and then started to build that up. But each box jump session that I did, I got feedback from it, which was going to help lead me into the next one. So, you know, I'd see an issue on hour three, or when I do 3 hours, that when I go into the hour four, it can benefit. For example, the right footwear, taping, the right work rate, rest rates, the right strategy going into it. And I only got the actual strategy kind of right when I did my 8 hour box jump, which was exactly 2 weeks before the big event. And I kind of changed the strategy because I realized that I wasn't accounting for potential problems, because if I did 10 box jumps a minute every minute for 24 hours, Guinness World Records had only given me 24 hours to complete the event. So if anything had happened during any of those minutes, then I hadn't accounted for going past the 24 hours, and there would have been nothing worse than doing something for that long and obviously it not counting towards the record. Not that the record was the big focus, of course it was for the charity, but to, you know, keep my mindset focused, it needs to have that kind of element of competitiveness. So my strategy changed from kind of 10 box jumps a minute every minute to say, do you know what would be a really good idea? If you gave yourself 10 minutes rest every hour, because then you've got something to look forward to, you've got something to aim towards, and then you basically have 10 minutes to go to the toilet if needs be, change your clothes if needs be, and work out any kind of niggles if you have them. The only problem with doing that is that you now have to do more box jumps per minute. So my 10 box jumps a minute every minute strategy went from 10 to 13. And then I had to do 13 box jumps every minute for 45 minutes.
Right.
And then up that to 15 box jumps every minute for 5 minutes, which took me to 660 box jumps a minute.
Wow.
And allowed me 10 minutes break at the end of each hour. And that was the kind of strategy I worked out. That went pretty well. I did have a bit of a rough time halfway through, but I never dropped really that 660.
You talk a lot about, by the way, guys, give us a like and a share if you're just joining. We've got some great numbers. Appreciate this. You talk a lot about strategy, right? It sounds like you, you know, you're really well prepared in your head of what exactly strategy we're going to use. But there's that age old phrase from Mike Tyson. He said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. So let me ask you this, like, you've got the strategy, but come 16, 17, 18 hours when you've not slept, you're obviously going to be fatigued. Like, where are you at there mentally? Where's your head at? Where's your strategy when you're that deep into fatigue?
Well, I kind of add to that that quote, because I love that quote, but I always ponder that. And there's two different types of people. There's people that get punched in the face and they get scared and they cower.
Okay.
And then there's people that get punched in the face and then they get fired up and focused. And it's kind of that fight or flight mechanism.
I like that.
When shit hit, like, I'm an ex-British Army soldier. I was in the army for 7 years. When shit hits the fan, things change in my head.
Sure.
You know, I've got head down and I focus. You know, I realize that I do have another level to step up if I need to. And that's come from practice. That's come from doing these events and knowing and pushing myself beyond what I thought was possible over many years. So this didn't come naturally to me. This is always something that I've pushed over the years. And when you've done more and more and more crazy things, you've got something to compare it to. So when I was going through a tough time with the box jump, I thought back to when I was having a tough time running backwards for 24 hours, because I realized I was going, you know, on the 24 hour backwards run, about 15 hours in, I was struggling big time, really big time. I was trying not to fall asleep. I couldn't feel my fit in my legs.
Oh, wow.
And then hour 16, I ran my fastest ever 10K backwards that I actually ran faster in hour 16, 10K than I did on a practice run 4 months before, where I did the Brighton 10K backwards. I ran faster on hour 16. And it makes you think, where the hell did that come from? And the only person that I've been able to see that can explain that is a guy called David Goggins. And what he talks about is when you feel like you want to give up, understand that you're only at 40% and you've got more to give. So I went through a really, really hard time on the box jump where I was I think it was hour 9 to 10 was the worst hour.
Wow.
And the reason being is that in order for me to get 13 box jumps a minute, I have to jump down and jump back up. So I have to rely on my calves and Achilles to spring back up to basically reduce that time frame down. And 13 box jumps was taking me around 14 to 15 seconds. So I was having 45 seconds of the minute to rest and recover.
Sure.
And just get my breath back. But I had my calf spasmed, my quad spasmed, and I had to rest pause on every single rep. So I jump up, jump down, compose myself, jump up, jump down. So that 14 to 15 seconds turned to 35 seconds. And for the hour of 9 to 10, I had less time to rest than I had to work. So I had to work for 50 minutes with a spasm quad and calf. Oh. And I had 25 seconds in between just to get one of those Theraguns in there and just massage it so I could get ready to go again. So everyone around me was kind of concerned because obviously I'm 9 hours in, I've got another 14 hours to go.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was just like, I just need to get through this hour and then I'll sort it out.
Love that.
I managed to get through it, jumped on the massage bed, the sports massage guy Faz there, who's absolute legend, managed to just get the get all the niggles out of my calf quite quickly. Just that time, I was just like, right, I'm just going to take this next hour easy, 10 to 11. And I was kind of back in the game.
Brilliant.
And when I got to kind of hour 12 to 13, weird things happen to your body. I no longer had these niggles anymore. I no longer had any calf injuries.
Wow.
I was fine. The only thing that I felt from a pain point of view was just blisters on my feet. So by the time I got to sort of 13 to 14 hours, I kind of knew I had it and I just needed to keep kind of pushing forward and, you know, just ticking those hours and those reps off.
In your head, was there ever any doubt that you were, because you seem quite sort of very strong-minded, obviously, I think probably you would say the military probably played a part in that. It sounds like you had such a strategy, and I think with that kind of mindset, was it ever in doubt in your head?
No. I train so much. So what I say to a lot of people is that if I can't start one of these events without the knowledge that I am going to complete it, then I wouldn't start it. And I have to have that feeling. And it worries me when I'm training that I don't get that feeling yet. When I did the backwards run, it took me four and a half months to get that feeling of I've got this. And the backwards run, I mean, I did a six hour backwards run and I broke down in tears because I was in so much agony from my calf, which with a stabbing pain. And I pushed through, but it was like, you know, someone stabbing you on every single step. And I just kind of broke down because I was like, how the hell am I going to do this for four times the amount?
Sure, sure.
And I kind of had a holiday and then came back and my head just completely changed. You know, I rested, recovered, I thought about it and I was in the zone. For me, what happened on the box jump was 2 weeks before, I had an 8-hour session, which I was pretty apprehensive about, because that was the last big session to kind of compare what it's going to feel like on the day.
Yeah.
And I smashed the fuck out of that. I smashed it. Yep. I finished the 8 hours, you know, finished up, had a bath, just
chilled out
the missus. Was like, yeah, cool. It's done now. And I'm confident going into the 24.
Brilliant.
So for me, I have this kind of mindset where there's a, you know, the way that I look in my head is this means so much to me that the only thing that's going to stop me is if I black out.
Sure.
And I wake up in hospital, because there's too much riding on this, and this matters too much. You know, I'm not looking at this as, you know, oh, you know, I can fail. I've got a children's hospice. I've got two people on the day who came from the children's hospice and gave me a card that all the kids had made, and all, you know, all these kids had made of Mount Everest, and they've painted it and they've said thank you, and I haven't even done it yet. And what I did, I remember about hour 8 or 9, that massive card was on the table.
Brilliant.
I've actually got it.
Because I'm going to plug my laptop in while you do that.
So, long story short, this is the card. Okay. So this is a giant card from Chestnut Treehouse to say thank you. They'd put a little mountain on it and stars, and you know, they're saying thank you to something that I haven't.
Only
got all the signatures and that, and I haven't even done it yet. So what I did is I went over, I grabbed that. I put a chair by me and I stood it up. So whenever I turned around on the box, I could see that. And that gave me more energy and focus than you could imagine to complete it.
Amazing, mate. I love it. I love this.
And it's all a mindset thing. You know, like fitness will get you so far, but it's how you talk to yourself in your head.
Sure.
And the narrative that you play to yourself, because this is what you're trying to get over. You know, you're going to go through a tough time. And this isn't necessarily box jumping Everest. You know, for everyone who's listening to this, everyone goes through shit in their life. And what you have to understand, and this is very much about stoicism, you can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you deal with it and how you respond. And that is something that is within our total control. And this all comes down to the narrative that you play in your head and how you interpret pain. Essentially, you know, a lot of people look at pain as something that needs to be, you know, avoided.
Yeah.
When in actual fact,
where the growth is, right?
A lot of time, that's what needs to be embraced, because that's where you're going to find out who you are.
Yeah.
And any kind of discomfort, which I've found throughout the years of business and with personal development, has always equated to growth, even at the time when you feel that it's not. And this is a huge thing to understand, that what you're feeling now, you actually might be thinking happened 2 to 3 years from now, or even a year from now, or even a few months from now. So there's an amazing long-winded story, but I'll say it quickly. And it's an old Zen story saying the outcome is not the outcome, because there is no end. And the whole story goes, there was a farmer, and he had two horses, and the two horses escaped from the stable and disappeared. And the village said, oh, poor you. That's so unfortunate. And the farmer said, I don't know. We'll see. The next day, these two horses came back, and they came back with two horses. So he now had four horses. And the village people said, how fortunate. And the farmer said, I don't know. We'll see. The next day, his son was riding one of the horses, and it bucked him off, and he broke his leg. And the village people said, how unfortunate. And the farmer said, oh, well, I don't know. We'll see. A week later, there was the military coming around to draft people for the war. And because his son's leg was broken, he couldn't go to war.
Right.
And the village people said, how fortunate of your son to break his leg. And, you know, the farmer says, I don't know. We'll see. And what I love about that story is there's lots of different things that happen, but you don't realize what the outcome is yet, because the only real outcome that you'll know whether something is good or bad is when you're on your deathbed and you're finished.
Yeah.
You really don't know the things that you're going through now, where they're going to end up, where they're going to take you. And if you're able to look at things, and I mean good and bad, in a positive light, in the knowledge that you don't know yet whether that is a good thing, then you can really, really change the way that you look at things.
I love that, mate. I love that. I've been watching some of your Instagram stories, and I know anyone that follows you will probably have seen too, but you love your like early morning dips in the sea. You start by saying, if you can sort of do something which is quite uncomfortable that you don't really want to do first thing in the morning, and overcome that pain, and you're saying it will really set you up for the day. Talk to us more about the whole kind of like getting in the sea first thing in the morning, because I'm sure there's loads of other people doing it now off the back of you doing it.
Yeah.
It really is great to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people, I've just read my book and I talk about cold water and how it's had a positive impact on my life and my, you know, my physical and mental well-being. And a lot of it, you know, I speak about cold showers, I speak about sea dips. And I woke up this morning, it was freezing cold, it was raining, it was windy, and everything about me did not want to jump in an ice cold sea. It's 8 degrees in the sea, it's horrible at the moment. And these kind of feelings are bullshit, basically. I actually last night slept in my swimming trunks. So when I wake up not wanting to
You're ready.
Yeah, I wake up, I go to bed in my swimming trunks because it gives me zero excuse. Because if I'm looking outside and I say, maybe I won't do it today, I look down and go, well, if you're not going to do it, why on earth are you in your swimming trunks?
Yeah.
So it kind of says to me, you're full of shit. And I walk down there not wanting to do it, I take my clothes off, it's horrible, I jump in, I have a massive smile on my face, I walk out the sea and I feel incredible. Yeah. And it's because the person that walks in the sea is very different to the person that walks out. The person that walks in the gym when they don't want to is very different to the person that walks out who's full of endorphins and glad that they did it.
Love that.
And the thing that people need to start conditioning themselves to do is to do things when they don't want to do. So many people rely on motivation to get shit done, but motivation will only get you so far. Motivation will get you started,
yep,
but discipline will keep you going. And that is the most important thing to understand, is that once you discipline yourself to say, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway, you will achieve incredible things. And the reality is you can condition yourself to do this.
Yeah.
You can condition yourself to get up early. You can condition yourself to go to the gym early. You can condition yourself to go for a cold shower every day. You can condition yourself to jump in the sea. You don't need to go to those extremes. But if you can commit to doing something horrible every single day for 30 days straight, you'll get what I mean.
Yeah.
And this is the reality. People always say to me when I do stuff, what are the benefits? And most things that are worth doing in life, you don't see the benefits straight away.
Yep.
You see them after consistently doing them over time. You don't go to one gym session and suddenly have the physique of your dreams. It's something that takes many, many months, many, many years to do. You don't suddenly jump in the sea that one time and it changes your life. It's something that you have to commit to doing for a long period of time to see the benefits from what it is that you're doing. And this is exactly the same with cold showers. You know, I say to people, commit to doing 30 cold showers, you know,
yeah,
a month of them. I did it back in February last year. The first one was horrible. The second one was horrible.
Yep.
Funny enough, 14 days in, I could actually stand under a cold shower and actually not need to switch it on to hot. And it was just weird because I was like, how is this possible? And it's that specific adaptation to impose demands. You place greater demands on your body in any kind of respect and your body gets used to it. And, you know, becoming harder to kill, and that's the way that I like to look at it, by getting stronger, adapting to cold and doing all of these things, are always a good thing to focus on.
Love it, mate. So, guys, listen, keep giving us a like and a share. Any questions you've got, just pop them below and we'll get on to that. We've got plenty of time. Jamie, you've got a new book out, mate. Okay.
And I have indeed, yes.
And so that's your second book. And I'm really interested to hear all about this because I'm writing my first one. So your first book, Mindset of Muscle, absolutely loved it. You've got a new book out called Meltdown, and it's all about turning your hardship into happiness.
That's right, yeah.
Tell us all about it.
So it kind of started off from where the last one finished. You know, I spoke about a lot of strategies that I use for my body, business and brain. And in 2016, I had one of my most successful years. I'd built my gym facility. I'd wrote Mindset of Muscle, which went to a bestseller. I had one of the top UK podcasts. I'd just obviously smashed the charity event, and I'd had one of the most successful years in business. And what happened to me in December, I went from feeling incredible to incredibly dark. And I felt like I'd missed something for my life. And one of the biggest things that I realized that I'd missed is spending time with my family and friends and the people that I cared about. I'd spent so much time with strangers and so much time with people. You know, if you messaged me on Facebook, you'd get a response. If you emailed me, you'd get a reply. If you'd stop in the street or stop me, you know, or ask me for help, I'd be there for you. And that was very good, because it's very selfless to focus on other people, but I wasn't focusing on myself and I wasn't focusing on my family. It kind of, over that Christmas period of 2016, got to kind of break point with myself and my wife. Wow. I decided to move out and try and figure out what on earth happened. And Meltdown kind of talks about the journey that I kind of went through that really bad hardship, and understanding that, you know, it's great ticking boxes and being successful and do it and hustling and getting all this shit done, but what is it for?
Yeah.
And this is what you have to understand, is that stress plus rest equals growth. And
like that.
I was not having enough rest. I was not taking time off. I was not switching my phone off. I was not, you know, I was just so connected to everyone and everything, because I thought in order to be successful, that's what you needed to do. And it wasn't until I started to take my foot off the gas a little bit and understand that, look, it's not cool to just have 4 hours sleep, Jamie. It's not cool to work 7 days a week. It's not a badge of honor. What's a badge of honor is getting 8 hours sleep, being fully recovered, and having an amazing, productive day because you're full of energy.
Yeah.
What is amazing is taking the weekend off and not checking emails and that, and being with your family and friends, and then being back in the game on Monday with a fresh head, fully focused to kick the shit out of the week. And it's not until you start to take that time off and see the benefits from doing it in your work that you realize where you fucked up.
Yeah.
And, you know, what was fantastic is as I was writing the book last year, 2019, I had a more successful year than I did in 2016. You know, I built a new business. I wrote another book, of course, Meltdown. I obviously did the Box Jump Everest and you know, broke a Guinness World Record. I did everything that I did in 2016. But I took 10 times as much, 10 times more time off. I took more weekends off. I switched my phone off after 8. I took days off social media. I scheduled stuff. I deleted emails
wow.
that weren't relevant, or that person couldn't find the information. I didn't get back to every single message. And I finished 2019 fully fresh, focused, happy, and had a phenomenal year. And that's kind of what the emphasis of Meltdown is about. You know, it's getting out of this hardcore hustle culture and understanding that stress plus rest equals growth. And so many people need to focus on that rest part, because that's what's going to help you grow.
I think we spoke about this before. It's either when I was on your podcast or you were on mine, and you were talking about the kind of like that whole, and I think you were trying to still figure it out at the time. And I was trying to figure it out as well, that whole kind of like, that rest and recuperation and balancing sort of family with business. And I think, you know, I've been through it as well. You kind of like, you almost feel guilty at first to kind of say no to stuff and take time off, because we live in a culture now where we're almost being told all the time, you've got to grind, you've got to hustle, you've got to push, you've got to, do you know what I mean? And so I know how hard it is, and especially some of my own business and a family as well. So what was that like, actually trying to pull yourself away and do a little bit less? It's hard, isn't it?
It's difficult, but I think the only thing that makes it difficult is you've yet to see the success from doing it.
Yes.
Because you've only seen the success from how you've done it before. And it's the same with anything. You know, if you have taken a week off, people have done the work which you've delegated to them and you've seen the results from it, then that is the kind of positive feedback loop to say, hey, that's cool. And this was the biggest thing to me, was trusting the team around me, delegating things out and not micromanaging.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot better at that. In fact, I've got very good at trusting other people now to make those mistakes, because at the end of the day, that's how I learn. I learn from fucking things up. If I'm not allowing other people to fuck things up, then how are they going to get better? And a lot of people are worried about doing it. But how do you expect to have a phenomenal, you know, a phenomenally good team if they're not going through the same things that you did to get where you are? And, you know, I've got a very small team, which I trust 100% with everything that I do. You know, I keep my circle of, you know, colleagues very close. Got small, you know, a group of people that work in my business that I completely have trust with, and I've got very good at kind of delegating and trusting that they're able to do that work.
So with the book Meltdown, obviously it's not really anything to do with fitness and nutrition. It's who's the book for? It's obviously a mindset book. I know you've very much gone down that avenue now, like I'm trying to. Who is it for? Who's the book for?
I think it's for anybody who is had a year of struggle, has trying to figure things out, and just really needs to pinpoint those things that they're unsure about. Because what I'm hoping is that this book gets to somebody before they get to where I got to.
Sure.
I'm hoping that this book makes people realize the patterns that I was getting in so they don't get into those. I'm hoping this book is for somebody that is wanting to be successful with their life, with their business, but is worried that they're doing too much and worried about taking their foot off the gas. And I think this book is, I'm hoping that this book gives people permission to take that rest, to take that recovery, and realize that that is actually going to make you become more successful. And it, you know, this isn't just a business book. This is for any person who's wanting to achieve anything in their life, be it, you know, with their job, be it with their, you know, with their brain essentially, and be it with their business too.
Can you give us some, maybe like two or three of the kind of practical things that somebody could, you know, implement into their life to help them get out of a little bit of a meltdown like you did, buddy?
I think the biggest thing that people need to understand is where they stand. I have in the book a selfless selfishness scale. And you've got to know where you are on that scale, because if you are extremely selfish, that will come back to bite you in the ass, because you're focusing on yourself instead of helping other people. And it's important to be selfish to a certain respect, because you've got to fill your vessel up first. But
yeah,
some people are incredibly selfish and then they end up struggling because they become very lonely, because they're only looking after number one and everyone's kind of left them around because they're, you know, they're being incredibly selfish. At the same level of the extreme, I know a lot of people who are extremely selfless. They put others before themselves. And the reason that they're having a lot of problems in their life is because they're serving other people before they serve themselves.
Yep.
And if you are down that end, or if you're down on the self, you know, extreme selfishness end, you need to go to the opposite direction. So if you're a person that is normally doing a lot of things for other people, you need to kind of tell people to fuck off. You need to kind of put yourself first for a few months and actually prioritize your own health, happiness, and agenda in life. If you're extremely selfish, you need to stop thinking about yourself and start helping other people more. Spend a few months going around asking people, what can I do for you? And this is going to get that balance out, because we're looking at these as not two things. We're looking at these as the same thing. They're just different extremes on a scale, because any extreme on that scale equates to the same problem. So kind of ask yourself, if you're struggling with something now, is it because you're on the one end or the other of that? So that is kind of the selfishness, selflessness scale. And I think the next one is just understanding that there's kind of many different strategies that I put in the book, but it's all about learning to say no.
Right.
And I think a lot of businesses and a lot of people struggle to say no to people.
Yep.
You know, if people ask for a favor, they say yes. If people give you an opportunity, you say yes. And what you end up doing is you end up spreading yourself too thin, and you end up not getting the things that need to push the needle forward in your life or your business or your body forward, because you spend too much time helping other people when you should have said no. And it's getting good at saying no and understanding that, you know, I love the kind of quote that the GB Olympic rowing team used in the Sydney Olympics to win all the golds, and it was, will this make the boat go faster?
I love this.
And what their coach spoke about in the Olympic Games was they had this mentality for 2 to 3 years of training. With everything that they did in their life, they'd ask themselves, will this make the boat go faster? So when people were saying, oh, you know, do you want to come on a night out? They'd ask themselves, will this make the boat go faster? And the answer would be no. And sometimes you need to go to that extreme, because if you want to achieve incredible things, you need to kind of learn to say no to things, because yep. you're looking at the bigger picture. And their bigger picture was, of course, 7 to 8 gold medals at the Sydney Games. Your gold medal could be something else, but that would not have been achievable had they not had that mindset. So kind of ask yourself, the next time somebody asks you for a request or a favor or something that's going to take you away from that gold, will it make the boat go faster? And if the answer is no, get good at saying no.
I like it. Guys, any questions you've got, just post them in the comments. We're going to do about another 10 minutes, so we wanted to give you sort of 45 minutes of value. Jamie, you talk, you know, obviously the title of the book is called Meltdown. It's all related to when you had your kind of meltdown in late 2016. So you've got a young daughter. I know she's 6, so a little bit younger than my eldest. So she would have only been like 2 right then. You must have been in a dark place to sort of decide you're going to move out. I mean, would you say you were depressed, or, because I mean, it's kind of the mental health thing with busy men these days is very prevalent. Were you depressed, or where were you?
I think kind of the word depressed is thrown around a lot.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't have a full understanding of what that kind of that is. And there's different scales of depression, of course. Obviously, you've got clinical depression, which, you know, regardless of anything that happens good in your life, someone with clinical depression still has that darkness.
Yep.
For myself, you know, I don't like to kind of look at it as depression. I was going through a funk. I was going through a meltdown, and it was something that I knew I could, I'd say knew I could figure out. And this is the reality. I thought I could figure it out for myself. And I thought when I did get out of it, that I had got out of it myself. But it wasn't until I'd spoken to other people that I realized how much other people around me were doing stuff without me knowing.
Right.
And there was always people around me looking after me, checking I was okay, checking in with me, and doing all of those things. And, you know, that was kind of an incredible wake up call for me. Yes, it was a difficult time. Yes, I'm very grateful for it, because it allowed me to understand that I was normally a get up and go guy, but then I'm waking up every day thinking, what's the fucking point?
Really?
And I know a lot of people go through that.
Sure.
You know, I still turned up for work, and I think that was the most important thing. You know, I was going through this funk, but I knew it would not get better if I just stopped doing what it was that I was doing. So I still got up, still did the work, still posted every day, still did all my social media, still did all my seminars, all my talks, this, that, and the other, and just kind of showed up and turned up and did the work. And I think that attributed a lot to it, because it's also one of the most hardest things to do when you're going through a dark time. Okay. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to go and do stuff. You don't want to see people. You don't want to interact. And listening to that and not doing those things can cause you to slip a lot deeper into that funk that you're in.
I think, go on.
And I think it's so important, you know, the thing that I'm grateful about it was to have that feeling enables me to understand when other people are feeling it.
Oh.
Mine was very much environmental. You know, it was about figuring out the things that I was doing wrong, which caused me to get into that position.
Yeah.
And a lot of that came through very brutal self-awareness that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't as successful as I thought I was. Yes, from a business point and from, you know, ticking boxes and what would people deem as success on paper, yes, but what real success is in multiple things: health, wealth, productivity, and connectivity.
Love it.
You know, my health, you know, I was up and down, looked good. Yeah. Looked great. Was in the shape of my life, drinking a lot. So health wasn't, you know, I'd say a 5, It's more of a three.
Right.
Wealth, yep, great. Gym was doing well. Everything was doing well there. Productivity, yep, getting shit done, ticking lots of boxes. I'd say 5 out of 5 for productivity. Connectivity, 1.
Yeah.
You know, I was connecting with people with my content, but I wasn't connecting with people in real life. And that was a kind of a realization, because then that comes down to the extreme. What am I doing wrong? I'm shutting myself away from the world. I'm not emotionally connecting with people. What do you need to do? Extreme emotionally connect to people. Extreme connecting with people. Get back that, you know, connection with human beings, yep, instead of social media. Go and have a coffee with someone instead of a Skype call.
Yep.
Go and, you know, go for a night out and not track your macros and shit like you. And I say that for people out there who are, you know, getting into that kind of funk. And that's why it's important to, what I have in the book is a meltdown management scale.
I like it.
And at the end of every chapter, I ask people these questions to see where they rate, so they know what they need to work on the following week.
Yeah.
And that's so important, because you can have a great week, but if you've missed certain things, then you know that you need to work more on that the next week, because then it's all about balancing things out. And balance isn't perfect. You know, you're always going to steer one way or the other depending on what you have for the year.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you might be going full in on your health, tracking everything to the letter, because that's what your outcome based goal is. Or like I did over Christmas, I was full on not productivity, not, you know, this. I was full on connectivity mode. I was full on spending time with my family, telling everyone else to fuck off.
Yep.
Anyone who requested anything for me to do before Christmas, the answer was speak to me in January.
Yeah, that was me as well. That's brilliant. Yeah, right, prime example. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I said, look, just come and speak to me in January about it.
Yep.
And that was it. That was me shutting off from the world and being full on 100% connectivity with my family and friends. Yep.
I think as well, it's so easy now to be disconnected. I talk about this a lot. I mean, it's never been easier to be a lazy parent. You just give a kid an iPad or an iPhone, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you've always got to kind of do this kind of whole kind of like self-awareness thing, because it is just so easy. You think, oh, I'm out there, I'm providing, I'm working, I provide well for my family, so therefore that's enough. It's not enough. It's not enough.
No. No, and it's very easy for people to say that in their head, because they're getting success in one area.
Yeah.
And it's almost a justification to say, you wouldn't understand. You don't know how hard this job is. I've got hundreds of clients, if not thousands of clients that I need to serve. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Because there's always someone out there who's got 10 times more clients than you, who's still connecting with the family.
Yeah.
There's always, and this doesn't just come from a business sense. You know, I speak to people all the time who say, oh, I can't be in shape because I've got 3 kids. And I'm like, well, let me meet you to one of my clients who's got 5 kids and is not using your excuse.
Yes.
And it's being able to smell your own bullshit.
Yeah.
And when you're in the room with your own bullshit, it smells fine. Sometimes you need to step out of the room and come back in to realize that it fucking stinks. And to be able to do that to yourself is a very powerful thing to do, because you need to check yourself before you rate yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I like what Paul Moore sort of teaches. I'm talking to Morty on the Friday. Obviously, us guys both know him well. And he talks about the 5 Fs, and he's trying to get everything in balance. You've got like fitness, family, focus, fun, and finance. And, you know, some guys might have it all in one area. Yeah, their finances are great and their focus is good in work. But what about family time?
Exactly.
You know, what about fun? And I did his mantra, and it was great, because you're kind of going, well, this is great here, but actually that's shit over there. I need to work on that. And I think it's very, very hard for modern men to kind of like tick all those boxes, but it's obviously something we need to work on.
And I think one of the biggest things that I see with a lot of guys, and something that was very close to my heart last year, and something that I focus on a lot, was supporting the charity Calm, which is the campaign against living miserably.
Love it.
A thing that shocked me was that 84 men take their lives every single week in the UK. 84 people a week. And that's just, for me, that's just insane. And a lot of that comes down to not thinking that they're able to talk to people.
Yeah.
And one thing I found in my job, in what I do with my groups and that, is that a lot of the guys, and yeah, specifically guys, are able to open up to strangers more than their close family and friends.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to always tell people that if they're struggling with something, it's actually a sign of strength to ask for help.
Oh, yep.
And I think more people need to understand that if you are going through something, that it's, you know, chuck that bravado out the window. If you're struggling, ask for help. Because a lot of this you can't do by yourself. There's amazing people like Calm who are just a phone call away, who can just go through, you know, just sit and chat to somebody and get it out of your head. It's so, you know, it could be such an amazing thing for somebody to do and can actually potentially save lives. And that's something that I had committed to do last year. I'm going to commit more to this year as well by, you know, contributing some of my. Last year, I donated £5 to every person that signed up to my J8 last year.
Yep.
And I'm focused on doing some bigger projects this year too.
Brilliant, mate. Jamie, it's been awesome, mate. I really appreciate your time. That 46 minutes has just flown by. So look, to conclude, where can we get our hands on the book if anybody watching this wants to pick it up?
Easiest place is Amazon. Just type in Meltdown and look for the bright orange book. It will be just there. I'm also going to be having some signed copies available next week, which I'll be telling everybody about on Instagram and Facebook too.
Brilliant. And you've self-published this, right?
Yes. Yep. Self-published. Yep.
I'll speak to you separately about that because that's the kind of road I'll probably be going. But listen, buddy, I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. I really appreciate you've given some amazing value tonight. And I think, you know, there is more of a shift these days towards the whole mindset. You know, I often say to clients, you don't need a new diet. You don't need a new fitness program. You need to work on the mindset. And so you've given us some real nuggets tonight, Jamie, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I just want to say that... a quote that's stuck with me for many, many years, and it's transformation starts from the head up, not the head down.
Love it.
Get that right, and then the rest will fall into place.
And that's Jamie Alderton saying it. So, mate, I really appreciate it. We'll sign off here. I am going to go and chill out with the fam. I expect you're going to do the same, and I'll drop you a little message tomorrow. But thanks again, Jamie, and I hope the guys got
some great. Thank you, Mark.
Right. Take care.
And thanks to everyone that's listening.
All right, thanks, bud. Cheers, Jamie. Take care, bud.
You've been listening to 30 Plus Men's Fitness. You can find us by searching 30 Plus Men's Fitness on Facebook or by visiting 30plusmensfitness.com. You've taken the first step to getting fit and healthy. We'll see you next time.